evening, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to Season 7, Episode 2 of the Johnny and Josh podcast. Great to have your company. Reunited, feels so good. Amazing to think that this is, what, the halfway point of the season already, and we're only on the second episode. But that's because it's so hard to tie down the two legends of British baseball. I am, of course, talking about the Channel 5 producer extraordinaire, Mr. Eric Jansen, and JC, the greatest baseball brain this small island has ever produced. JC, lovely to see you. Eric, good to see you, boys.
How are you doing, Johnny?
Looks like you had a big cricket day.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see this, but in case you're at home, you're not watching on video, I'm afraid I've taken one to the wrist. I'm not 100% sure of the damage. I've been told to go to A&E. I said, no, I've got a podcast to record. The boys are waiting. I'm just going to have to go through the pain. I've done a lot of painkillers. I can't guarantee I'm going to talk any sense. I could be completely talking gibberish by the end of the podcast, and I apologize.
Well, a few responses to that. One is, that would be different from when. And two, you are as soft as, you know, the toilet paper that you use. As a person playing catcher and blocked balls off the wrist all the time, you know.
Excuse me. Have you felt the difference between a cricket ball and a baseball? There is no comparison. One is like a blancmange baseball. Cricket is like a piece of hard teak. It's like hard metal. You've got to be properly hard to play cricket, mate.
And I thought you were used to balls bouncing off your backside. Now, let's move on. We're going to talk baseball instead of cricket.
Thank the Lord for that. Well, guys and dolls, you know, the social media, we want you to hit the old subscribe button down the bottom. Whatever that means, you know where it is. This is only the seventh season. I still don't know what I'm referencing. We've got loads to get through and not a lot of time to do it. So let's kick things off straight away with batter number one. Now, as mentioned, we're not even at the halfway point of the season, let alone nearing the All-Star break. Yet there's still loads to discuss and address. I'm very excited about it. We're roughly about 57, 58 games out of 162 for some teams already done. As we all know, the best team in Major League Baseball right now just happens to be the Atlanta Braves. Yeah. My Braves. Come on, you Braves. So we're just going to throw out some quick bullet points. Hot topic number one, boys. What I want to ask, who can we say at this relatively early stage of the season is already done and dusted? Is it too soon, literally, to talk about teams who may be deemed as toast in the 2026 Major League Baseball season? I'm going to start you off with the obvious perennial disaster zone that is the Colorado Rockies. I mean, still bad. JC, you're actually in that part of the world. What's the vibe in Denver about the Rockies?
So it's funny because coming into the season, the expectations is that there would be an improved team. They went out and got Sugano. They had, you know, a little bit more depth offensively, and they made changes in the front office that would suggest that they could have been better. They are better, but that's not saying much, right? They were a historically bad team last year, but the injuries have cost them. You know, they've had Brenton Doyle's gotten injured. Mickey Moniak, who former number one overall pick, who actually is showing a lot of promise, has been a failure. I mean, he's been injured. He's been actually really good when he was healthy. But guys who you would have expected more from, like Tovar, Willie Castro, they haven't done that well. It's a general proposition. I feel like this discussion is too early. But of all the teams that we're going to discuss here, this is the one team that they are absolutely done already. It's really sad to say. And what's amazing is here in Colorado, people still go out to games. Just a game here today, they will have a relatively full stadium because people love going out to the ball game even when the team's bad.
I mean, Eric, I just wonder whether the people of Denver, it's almost just taken for granted we're going to be rubbish, but we'll still go out and cheer the team. It doesn't actually matter because expectations are so low at the beginning of the season.
And all credit to them as well, because as Josh would know, like the Colorado Avalanche went deep in the NHL playoffs until last week. So everyone was already NHL crazy. You know, is it fair to say that they're, you know, the Broncos mean more than the Rockies, the Denver Nuggets mean more than the Rockies, and I think hockey will still be number one over baseball in Denver.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, they're the fourth team, but the thing is they're outdoors at a nice time of year, and Colorado is a state, particularly, and Denver is a city that loves outdoor activity. So going out, sitting in the sun, you're going to get people who are going to do that. It's not quite as exactly like Wrigley and the, you know, the bleacher creatures, but it's a similar type of vibe. And that, like, people just love to be at the ball game, and that still is a huge piece.
All right, so let's vote.
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. Thumbs down from me, I'm afraid. And I'm assuming the same from both of you.
The Colorado Rockies, I think, can already be eliminated. And start preparing.
I think the bigger question with them are they going to be the worst team in baseball again this year? That's the more legitimate question.
Okay, well, they're getting a great run for their money, JC, from the other perennial losers of recent seasons, and that is, of course, the Los Angeles Angels. It's hard to believe that supposedly the best player in baseball up until Shohei came along, Mike Trout, has been an Angel all these years and yet only made the postseason once, despite his talent. They are just one game ahead of the Rockies at the moment. They're already seven games adrift. If it wasn't for the fact that the AL West as a division is pretty useless, with only one team with a better than 500 record, they'd already be out of it. But in reality, they're only seven games back.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team where I still think they have a chance to at least be a 500 team. Because you look at that lineup, you have Zach Neto at the top of the lineup. You've got, obviously, Trout. Joe Adell is a good power hitter. You have some depth there. Jose Soriano, he started the season a little better. He's kind of come off the boil a little bit. But you have, like, a number one starter. Reed Detmers has a lot of skill in that rotation. They need to kind of figure out the bullpen still a little bit more. But I actually think that they have the potential to be a 500 team.
Which still doesn't mean that they'll make the playoffs.
But to Johnny's point, that division is very up and down. I mean, I think Seattle's eventually going, you know, we talk about regression to the mean or progression to the mean. I think Seattle will ultimately be the team we expected them. They started so bad and they finally gotten their nose above 500. And that's with Cal Raleigh being injured and not doing well previous to that. Their pitching is just so good that they're going to be okay. But, you know, things can happen. Of these teams that are really bad on paper right now, I feel like the Angels still have a chance to kind of make good.
Okay, well, I'm with you, JC. What about you, Eric? Already eliminated or you never know?
No, already eliminated. And there's no joy in Angelsville or Troutsville.
Do you want me to share this information with the UK's number one Angels fan, Alan McKinley? Do you want me to break it to him gently?
I think he's already performing Harry Keery.
Hey, he doesn't care what's happening in the major leagues because in a fantasy world, he's a god this season. Another story. We'll talk about that.
Maybe the Angels should hire him to manage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. By the way, you're absolutely right, JC. The Mariners, with a five-game winning streak, the last five games, gets them over 500. I think they walk away with that division eventually. But by Jove, the rest of them are pretty damn useless. Okay, so we've made our decision about the Rockies and the Angels. Let's talk about what, for my money, is the biggest disappointment of the season. Not that I'm upset about it, because they are, of course, one of the big rivals of the Braves in the National League East. The New York Mets, the team of big Davey Lengel. We'll be hearing from him later. Boys, I mean, can it get any worse than spending monster money and being this bad? They are the Chelsea Football Club of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, honestly, I'm a little shocked that they're as bad as they've been, because the pitching is there, right? You have Nolan McLean, who has proved that he's in that upper echelon of young starters. Freddy Peralta is solid. The back of that, you know, Jonah Tong at some point is going to be good, even though he hasn't really thrown that much. It's just offensively, you know, they just haven't really been there. It's sad. I got to be honest, because when you invest that much and you don't get anything close to what you should be getting out of these players, you just got to shrug your shoulders.
229 runs scored so far this season. The only thing more shocking about that, Eric, is that that's the exact same total scored thus far by the Philadelphia Phillies. And one anticipates they will be scoring runs for fun. So this is not one National League team, East team, struggling. It's two.
Yeah, I mean, let's just face it. They just can't get it right. You know, they're the second highest payroll in baseball. And hey, I won't say I have a soft spot for Mets fans. Yeah, I do. I don't mind the New York Mets, but I just hate all Braves fans. That's all. And I just want to see them finish above the Braves, but it's not going to happen this year. And I just feel for Mets fans. They just can't do anything right.
14 and a half games back of the Braves right now, Eric. I think we both know that is not happening, my friend. I tell you what we need to do. We need to hear from New York itself, from the legend that is Mr. David Lengel, Mets fan extraordinaire. What have you got to say about this, David?
Why are you asking me about the Mets? Why aren't you asking me about the Knicks? That's a better topic right now. The Mets are not a great topic. The Knicks are a great topic. The Knicks are the light of all of our lives. It's all we care about, but you want to talk about the Mets. Okay. The Mets are a disaster. They have been poorly constructed by David Stearns. We never really got to see the team that he did construct. But you get the sense that his Milwaukee shit doesn't really work here. And even if they were on the field, Polanco's not on the field. Holmes is not on the field. Lindor is not on the field. Senga is, who knows? There's a lot of injury problems. Oh, Robert is not around. You know, none of the players that they got are working out. The trade for Nimmo, for Semien, you know, Semien couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. You've heard that one before. You know, Stearns is on as close to thin ice as I can imagine. His stuff may have worked well on the farm system. The Mets have a very deep farm system. But on the major league level, this team has been 11 games under 500. They went from a team that was, you know, maybe third in line on the National League side to go to the World Series to being a laughing stock, and yet the latest edition of the Mets stuff, the Mets issues, all the Mets shtick that comes along with being a fan of this team. So the season is over. Plenty of seats available. I vote for eliminated.
Okay, so pretty depressing from that side of the pond as well as this. For my money, boys, 14 and a half games back of the Atlanta Braves. So basically the East is done. They're a long way back in the wild card. I think they're done already, 2 months in. I just don't see them getting back into this race, even with 4 months of the season left. JC?
You got to remember that they've had past slow starts and then gotten back into the race. So I'm going to give hope for where David is not here, but in his stead, and say you never know.
Eric?
Yeah, you know what? I'm leaning towards the you never know. But yeah, okay. I'll stick with it. You never know. And let's hope they finish above the Braves.
Maybe things are starting to turn for the better. But I think we all know I'm right and you're wrong.
Moving on.
Okay, let's move it on. Let's go to the AL East. Let's talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, I'm just in a state of shock, given what a joy they were to watch last season. I was rooting for them in the World Series. They're not even 500. They're batting 483. They're 8.5 games back of the division-leading Tampa Bay Rays. What's your thought on the Blue Jays, JC? Is this the biggest disappointment story of the season thus far?
No, I think the biggest disappointment is another team in the AL East. That's the Red Sox. And I actually think that the Blue Jays are going to be fine. You know, they've had injuries to their pitching staff. Dylan Cease has been out. Yesavage has thrown actually quite well. And they just haven't gotten the power that was expected from that team. You know, Vladimir Guerrero is hitting for average. He's not hitting for power. It's been very fascinating looking at a lot of, like, the analytics on hitting this year. The best team in the East, right, has been the Tampa Bay Rays. You look at their hard hit status. So that's balls that have exit velocity of 95 miles per hour or higher. They are amongst the lowest in the league, yet the Rays are still winning. And when you look at home runs, Fernando Tatis Jr. just finally hit his first home run of the season. I think, like, we're so early that when we get to the end of the season, all these numbers are going to kind of even themselves out. And if you're looking at statistics that are potentially depressing the success of a team, so in the case of the Blue Jays, it's the fact they haven't hit home runs, that will come in my mind. So ultimately, I really do believe that they're going to be competing at the top of that division before the end of the year.
It's a really good point JC makes, Eric. 244 runs scored thus far this season for the Toronto Blue Jays. They're beating the Orioles, who are batting 467, who have scored 275 runs this season. I mean, that's almost 30 more than a team that are below the Blue Jays.
Now, here's the thing. Like, they've had a lot of injuries. A lot of injuries. It seems like everybody in the starting lineup was in and out of the medical clinic. They've had so many people on the injured reserve, but people have stepped in where the injuries were. So like, well, Alejandro Kirk went out for a few weeks, and then Valenzuela comes by, and then and fills in nicely. So they could have been worse. They could have been a lot worse with all the injuries they had, but they're keeping their body above water only just. So in the vote of eliminated or you never know, I'm going to go with you never know. I think Toronto
Yeah,
still has
I'm
a
with
chance.
you. I'm totally with you. Last season was too good to be an aberration. I think once you're right, once the injuries start to be a bit kinder towards them, I think they're definitely competitive. There's no way you could say they're eliminated at this early stage. I assume you feel the same, JC.
Oh, 100%. I think that the big X factor with them is the bullpen. Jeff Hoffman's been terrible. They need to be better in the later innings and
Yeah.
have that depth there. So figuring that out would be the one reason why I think that they wouldn't get to where they need to get to. But I think ultimately, as you've both said, they're too good a team to perform certainly under 500. But I think they'll be in the race.
Well, buddy, you brought up your team, the Boston Red Sox, as the biggest disappointment of the season. I mean, they just don't seem to get it together. Every time I see one of my fantasy baseball starting pitchers and I see the opposition is Boston, I'm like, yeah, baby, that's a win in the bag. I mean, that's how much I've become accustomed to Boston losing. It's been an
Yeah, I mean,
absolute disaster.
it's been heartbreaking, honestly, because I came into the season with a lot of expectation. It hasn't helped that Garrett Crochet has been injured since like mid-April. And, you
Yeah.
know, when you lose your ace, and the same with Eric's team, you know, when you think about the Tigers losing Skubal to injury, it has such a huge effect, I think, on the morale of the team, because they've gotten some decent pitching out of other starters, right? Sonny Gray's thrown well. They've had some of the younger pitchers throwing well. And the bullpen is not terrible, but the offense has just been anemic. Trevor Story's been out, but he really wasn't that good before he got injured. Roman Anthony, right? They've just been dealing with, and this is the common theme for all the teams that we think are underperforming or injuries. You know, you talk about your Braves, and one of the reasons they've done so well is they've stayed healthy, right? You've
Yeah.
had Sale hasn't been injured, Strider came back. Bryce Elder has thrown a lot better. Acuña's been around the whole season. You haven't had those injuries. It is a real difference maker when you lose three or four of your key components and you just don't know what to do to fill those spots.
Buddy, you mentioned the lack of hitting. I mean, just looking at it, there's only two teams in the whole of the major leagues who've hit less runs than Boston. You're probably not even going to guess who it is, but it's the San Francisco Giants, and it is, I believe, it's also, what was the other one? I think it is the Kansas City Royals. So there you
Yeah.
go. Two teams that are either last or second last in their divisions, and they're the only two teams that have had less success with the bat than Boston. So let's
Yeah, I mean,
vote.
like
Let's
it. I was just gonna say, like Caleb Durbin was meant to come in and, you know, sort of solidify third base. He never did that. Jarren Durant's had a tough year. Yeah, you go up and down the lineup, and it's just all been disappointment.
So the vote is already eliminated, or you never know. Gentlemen?
Already eliminated, guys, for me.
Josh?
You always got to believe. You never know, Eric. You
I'm
never
going to
know.
stick with the you never know. Despite the fact that they're in the AL East, you never know, but not very helpful. Moving on.
12 back, guys. 12 back. That's the heart ruling your brain there,
It's not the
JC.
All-Star break yet.
Yeah, it's
Okay.
we got lots of time. Lots of time.
Okay, well, let's talk about the heart ruling the brain. This one's going to be coming down Eric's avenue because we're going to talk about the dismal start of the Detroit Tigers. You've already mentioned Skubal injury, massive. Obviously, to come back from injury, hopefully. But now also, because they seem to be so far off the pace, 11 and a half games back as of tonight, that will he be used as trade bait? That would be a disaster because that is season over, isn't it, Eric?
Pretty much so. I mean, it's all that rebuilding that AJ Hinch has been doing over the years and last year getting to the playoffs, going pretty deep and being impressive. You think, well, hey, I think the Tigers are here. Have the wheels fallen off? No, but it's not looking good.
Yeah, I mean, you look
JC,
at.
in that division, the White Sox, the Chicago White Sox, have hit 51 more runs than Detroit. So the problem isn't just about their starting pitching and injury issues. They're not hitting the ball, the Detroit
Yeah,
Tigers.
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, Torkelson has been a real. He's regressed this year. You've had Torres, who's been injured. I mean, the one bright spot is McGonagall, who's been fantastic, and he's young. You have that to look forward to, but it's really been the pitching. I mean, you have Screwball's been injured. And Johnny, you're totally right. The reason that they're out of it in terms of the long term and it makes them different from all these other teams is Screwball's going to come back and they're going to deal him. He's going to go to the Dodgers. He's going to go to some big market team. And then they really don't have much. Framber Valdez has been a huge disappointment. And you've had injuries to Casey Mize, who really last year really finally kind of was reaching his potential. So,
hey, he's been great this season as well, Casey. His numbers are really good. His ERA is about 2.5.
When he was healthy. But he's on the DL or on the IL. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think that you're going to lose Screwball even when he's back. And as a result, I don't see good things for them the rest of the season.
So on the assumption that they are going to lose Screwball, are you saying eliminated?
Yes.
Okay. I'm with you. If they lose Screwball, I think it's over. Eric?
Only because it's a crappy division. You never know.
Okay. I love that. Right. So both of you voting.
We're relying on other teams above us to be as crap as we are. So yes.
Yes, exactly. And you're ignoring reality. Both ignoring reality.
But hide my head in the sand.
Okay, let's move it on. We've done enough of that. We've looked at all the rotten teams.
We had one more. We got to talk about the White Sox because they're my favorite team this year.
I apologize. I thought the White Sox were doing so well that they didn't even deserve they're batting 534. How are we having a discussion about them being eliminated at this point of the season?
Well, because of how bad they've been historically over the last handful of years. Do you think it's real or a mirage? I think that's the question with them. I think it's for real. I love Davis Martin, who's become sort of the ace of that rotation. Anthony Kay, who came back from overseas, all of a sudden he's solid. Sean Burke has been good. Like, they have some starters who can do some things. I think the big question is whether or not their offense can do enough to match the pitching. And Murakami has now gone on the DL with a hamstring, I believe it's hamstring injury. And he has been like sort of the offensive touchstone for them. I mean, hitting 20 plus bombs and have been just such, of all the Japanese imports this year, he has been the man. And so with him injured, I think that is the big question. Can they keep their head above water offensively without him? And that'll be the question. If they can, and they can hold on till he comes back, to Eric's point, this is a weak division. Maybe they're going to be competitive there.
JC, to your point, if you look at the whole of the American League, and that's all three divisions, only the Orioles and the Yankees have scored more runs than the White Sox right now.
Yeah. And I mean, he's not the only guy. I mean, they've got some young players, Meredith and Montgomery. They've got some young players who have some like offensive upside. But Murakami has been the reason that they have been so strong. And with him injured, I think it's going to be really interesting to watch that team over the next handful.
I'd love to blow my own trumpet, as you both know. I share a fantasy baseball team with James Holden, the legendary fantasy baseball player.
First waffle.
You know, boys, that's the waffle, is it? The first one of the night.
Wielding a waffle. Go on.
No. I selected the legendary Chicago White Sox third baseman, and he sent me a text message mid-live draft going, "What on earth are you doing? Picking up some unknown third baseman." And the man's what? Is he like second in the home run race so far this season? He's been awesome.
Well, James can now say, you should have known he was going to get injured.
Well,
the Johnny Jakes.
I think we all know that, James Holden, once a legendary fantasy baseball player, is no longer. I
mean, so the question is now, we vote the Chicago White Sox. Already eliminated or you never know?
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Stupid question. Gonna win the division. Come on, the White Sox.
I'll go, you never know.
Yeah, of course, you never know. I think the question is it's not you never know, it's are they gonna do it?
Yeah, well, time will tell.
Okay. Well, change the question. Postseason baseball for the White Sox. What's your thoughts?
You never know.
Yes or no?
Depends. Eric, get off that fence, man. I'm saying
you must have a splinter in your arm, Eric.
It's not even the halfway point. Moving on.
Okay. Right, batter number two. JC, this is something you really wanted us to focus on, and you're absolutely right. It is the ABS, the automated balls and strikes. This is the first season. We're 2 months in. Really interested to hear your views on this. For anybody who's not 100% sure how this all works, let me just quickly run through it. Teams are now allowed two challenges per game. If they challenge and they're right, And this is strikes and balls, obviously. If they challenge and they're right, they don't lose a challenge. If they're wrong and the decision is upheld, the decision of the umpire, they lose one of those two challenges. And there was, interestingly, I believe, a technical glitch for the first time this season with regards to the ABS in the A's game, and I think it was even last night. But for the most part, ignoring the technical glitch, JC, what's your thoughts, what's your feelings 2 months in, because this is biggest change in Major League Baseball this season?
So you probably don't remember, Goldie. I mean, you probably don't remember yesterday, let alone what we did when we used to do the show. But this question had come up a lot about automated umpires, and I was always just dead set against it. I loved the human aspect of the umpiring and the frailty of it. That said, I love the ABS. I love the ABS because one of the things that I always feel about additional rulemaking in baseball is that the best ones create more strategic wrinkles in the way teams play the game. And the ABS has added so much intrigue and interest into it because it's not like every single pitch you could just tap your helmet and you can check it. You have to be strategic about when you do it. You get two challenges. If you miss it twice, then you can't do any more. You want to generally save one toward the end of the game because, you know, in a pitch that might matter more, you got to determine who is the best person to be making the challenge. We've seen statistically catchers tend to be most accurate, pitchers second, hitters last. So teams are having to come up with strategies. I also just think it's fun when you're watching a game, you tap the helmet and you get to see, it's like Hawkeye in tennis, and you get to see exactly how close it is. And it's rare that it's any more than like 0.1, 0.2 inches, either correct or incorrect. That's how close umpires get. So in fact, it actually bolsters the reputation of umpires. Even when they get it wrong, they're not getting it wrong by very much. So I am really enjoying it. I think it adds a new facet and wrinkle to the game that makes it more fun. And I am very pro ABS.
Eric, do you worry about the delay, the inevitable delay that it causes?
Well, the good thing is that they are only allowing two per game, right? Per team.
Yeah.
And it is, I just like Josh said, I'm you know me, the old purist. It's like, how dare they introduce this into the game? The game that we love, human error is part of the mystique of baseball. But no, I'm loving it. And it hasn't detracted the game. What we have seen as well is ABS being the deciding factor of a walk-off run, you know, and that in itself is exciting as well.
Yeah, and we're getting it right. And I want to say one other thing to your concern about slowing down the game. The hitter or the fielder has 2 seconds from after the call is made to determine whether they're going to challenge. So that doesn't really slow things down, and then the response is almost immediate. So it has not
slowed down. So let me ask you this. Josie, if you're a head coach, are you telling your starting pitcher and catcher you're the only two that are going to call this because they've got the best sideline?
What I love about it, and I'm sure there are people in analytics departments in every single major league team determining what is the best strategy for this. And if you look at different teams, you'll see some allow their hitters to do it more often. Some have their pitchers doing it more often. Some have their catchers. And I'm sure that there is a philosophy within each organization on the best way to do it. And when you get a new rule like this and you're determining how you're going to deal with it in the first year, it's fascinating because no one's cracked the code. So it's really fun to watch different teams take different approaches. Me personally, I'm a little biased. I would be like, let your catcher make the decisions on these.
Yeah.
But you know, it depends, right? Because if you're having the catcher do it, it's because you're on defense. If you have the hitter do it, you're on offense. So there are different reasons and different timings for when you choose to do it.
Interesting as well, Eric, if you look at the numbers, the success rate of the challenges so far this season is around the 53% mark, which is obviously pretty even. But where there is interesting differential is that when the fielding team are making a claim, a challenge, it's a 58% success rate. When it's the hitter, it's a 47%. And that just confirms for me that the number of whinging hitters goes, you know, that wasn't a strike, that was a ball. They don't know what they're talking about. They don't have the perspective. They don't have the same sort of accuracy that obviously...
The one split you didn't do there, Goldie, is between the pitcher and the catcher on the fielding side. And the catchers are over 60%. The pitchers are actually a little closer to the hitter's numbers.
Right.
Because I think, to your point, right, the hitters and the pitchers both are the ones who take it very personally when the ball is
gone. Exactly. There's the emotion.
Exactly. Whereas the catchers, I think, are a little bit more balanced in terms of making their choices.
100%. It does make me, I love what you're saying about the strategy, because what it reminds me of was the whole thing about challenging in cricket. You may remember that iconic Ashes series when Ben Stokes, I think it was the Headingley test, almost single-handedly won it on his own with the most amazing last wicket stand. And there was a really bad LBW challenge that the Aussies made, and it was overruled. They were wrong, and that was their last challenge. Because in the same way in baseball, there's a limit on how many you could do. There was then another LBW, and it was flipping plumb, but the ump didn't give it, and they couldn't challenge it because they'd used it up. So
Love it.
you're absolutely right. The self-control that
It
is
creates
required.
drama. Love it.
Exactly. Creates great drama. Okay. So thumbs up, thumbs down for the ABS.
I'm a
Big thumbs
convert.
up.
I'm a convert.
Okay.
Big thumbs up.
Well, I'm a sheep. You both say it's good. I'm with you. I'm a double thumb up. Okay. Okay, that's great stuff. Really enjoyed that. Let's get to the third batter, and that is an old hot potato. It says here in my script, stupid interleague. You won't be surprised to know that our producer Eric Jansen wrote the script. Is this you off on another rant, Eric?
I'll keep it brief because everyone who knows me knows I loathe Interleague, and it's the only time I swear and I say I fucking hate Interleague. 48 games out of 162 per team are Interleague games. And that's why, as you mentioned earlier, that we are seeing like divisions, like the AL West, like the entire AL West was under 500. And that's because the imbalance schedule with Interleague and them doing these unnecessary rivalries with teams that are not rivals. But yeah, there's a CBA coming out in the end of the season, and I hope to just get rid of Interleague. They could do one thing right, scrap Interleague. But that's my rant over. We'll move on from there.
JC, is Eric's point valid because of the amount of interleague? Would it just be better if we just had, just to spice it up during the dog days of August, if we just had a couple of weeks of interleague and that was the only time it happened? Would that be better?
I love Eric. I respect Eric. He's like a brother to me, but he needs to get the heck over this one. I mean, yes, a decade ago,
Biggest
15
butt
years
in the
ago.
history of butts.
I mean, yeah, years ago, I got sort of that desire to hold on to the past. We're just so far past it now. It's just part of the game. Like, so it goes, and let's move on. Like, you
No,
can't
no,
hold
no.
on.
Give it a month of interleague, and then that's it. And then back to a regular schedule program. Everyone go back to their own divisions. Everyone go back to their own leagues. NL, AL. Make the, Anyways, moving on. There's one more thing to add, Johnny, and it does involve our old friend Akil Baddoo. And I want you to read out the eulogy of said
Okay.
career.
So for our regular listeners, they all know about Badoo Watch, a view to Akil Badoo. You remember the story. We could safely say, with great sadness, this is definitely the last time on the podcast we'll ever be doing it. It's got to be done. And we're going to do an Akil update to explain why. So 5 years ago, for those of you that are not aware of the whole Akil Badoo came up and hit a home run in his very first pitch on his debut. He then, the very next game, hit a grand slam. So he had 11 RBIs in his first 10 games. I remember the footage. I remember the video footage. It was amazing. The family going crazy. It was everything I love about baseball. And we latched onto him and he thought, right, this is a new kid to watch. Let's create a whole section dedicated to him. As you know, despite that amazing start, 11 RBIs in his first 10 games, and becoming a very big fan favorite, not just with us, but in America as well. And yet, after 5 years, all we've witnessed is a player going up and down between the majors and the minors. And we've kept you abreast of where he is and what he's doing. And he was being recalled. Well, I can tell you now, he's been traded from Detroit, where he's been for the last 5 years, to Milwaukee in the offseason. Sadly, as has happened a lot in the past, Akil Baddoo got injured during spring training and has been placed on the 60-day IL. So it appears at the moment to be back to full health, which is great news, but the Brewers don't have room for him on their 26-man roster. So he'll be stuck in the minors for a lot longer still. So for us, it's the end of an era. It was fun while it lasted, and we'll always have that fairy tale week at the beginning of his career when he hit 11 RBIs in 10 games. I will miss him. I wish him well. I hope with all my heart that he gets back to the majors and becomes the star that in our eyes he's always been.
I feel like we've lived through the movie that is A View to a Kill, right? Like, we got to the height and we've come back down. We've done this pod for a while, but what was interesting about Badu, and I don't know how real this was, but there was a lot of discussions behind the scenes that he might have played for the Great Britain national team at the World Baseball Classic, that he had enough of a connection to the Dominion, to, you know, to the British Empire, to be on that team. I guess it didn't work out, or maybe it was an injury. But, you know, he was closer to home than we even realized. I mean, there are a number of players like British Virgin Islands that they come from that connection that was able to get them. Even players who had connection through Hong Kong when Hong Kong was still part of.
So members of the Commonwealth is basically what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
That was part of the process. So sad.
There we go. Well, we wish him well. We wish him well.
Moving on.
Okay, we've got to move this thing along. We're not going to do the seventh inning stretch this week. Time is of the essence, but what we can't miss out on is the latest in the world of baseball cards, courtesy of the legend collector that is JC.
Yeah, well, this is we're going far back, as I typically do, and talk about cards and players from the pre-war era. And as Eric rightly pointed out, he's very kind to let me do this as being the producer. He has ultimate veto power, but giving me a shot. I know this is more of a show and tell, so if you're listening to the podcast, you won't be able to see this card. But I'm doing the 1933 DeLong Gum Company set. And I will show it for you, Eric and Johnny, and I will describe it. These are really unique cards, and they're kind of weird. They have like this drawn-out baseball field, and then they have these sort of giant versions of players. And they have so many great stars that were in the 1933 set. This is not one of them. This is a guy named Marty McManus, who had an excellent major league career, but wanted to show him. These are very hard cards to come by, so I don't have any of the more expensive ones, but wouldn't want to do them anyway, because I like to do sort of unique players. So why is Marty McManus interesting? He had a great major league career, 15 years, led the league in stolen bases 1 year, doubles another year, hit over 300 four times, had a career as a manager. He actually managed in the All-American Professional Girls League, Women's League, in Kenosha and South Bend. But why he's interesting is that he was looking at his card, sort of uncovered a fact about baseball that I thought was really fascinating that I didn't realize. In that year, 1933, for which this card represents, Marty McManus was the player manager for the Boston Red Sox. He held that role in 1932 and 1933, didn't have a particularly good career as a player manager, but did play that role. And it made me think, you know, we don't have player managers really at all anymore. The last one was Pete Rose in the mid-80s. But what I found out was from 1872 all the way to 1955, there was at least one team with a player manager through every single major league season. We don't think of that as something that would happen anymore, right? But back then, partially for cost considerations, partially because they wanted to have their best player also sort of leading the team, you know, that captain really meant being the captain for that long stretch for, you know, not 100 years, but, you know, 80, almost 80 years. Every single season, there was at least one player manager. Marty McManus was one of those in that long line of history.
JC, can I ask, if you have to give one reason why it was common practice then and is no more since the 80s, what would you think is the biggest factor?
I mean, honestly, I think it was cost consideration. I think back then you could get a great player, pay him a slightly more, and it'd be one person you didn't have to pay. Plus, it was also a draw for certain players, like Lou Boudreau with the Indians. He won a World Series as a player manager, and he was a great player, but you tell him you can also run the team. That's, you know, something that draws in a player to be more excited about being involved with the team.
And what's your perception of the success player managers had in terms of the team success rather than their own individual success?
I think it was really hit or miss. As we got later in the history of player managers, like Frank Robinson was a player manager in the 70s, it became sort of a part-time role. And the last one in Pete Rose was sort of an interesting situation in that really most people thought he was at a point where he needed to retire. But Marge Schott, who was the owner at the time, decided to keep him on as a player manager to allow him to chase Ty Cobb for the all-time hit leader record. And that was just a marketing ploy more than anything else. So he was a part-time player. He'd come in, he ended up breaking Ty Cobb's record. But once he broke it, he became just a manager because it really wasn't of that much value to take that one spot for an over-the-hill player, no matter how good they were during the height of their career.
I'm just racking my brains trying to think of player managers in other sports. And I think there have been in football, but I literally can't think of any.
Like, well, of course, quite a few. I grew up, Glenn Hoddle was player manager at Swindon at one point, if you ever followed Glenn Hoddle when he was in charge of lower league teams. But
But that's interesting, Eric. That works because even though he was quite old, he was such a good player in his time that for a team like Swindon at the level they were at, age was not a factor. He was still a quality
player. Bullitt did at your beloved Chelsea.
Yeah, I think it was only one season.
Then. And then he got fired, and then when he became full-time manager, and then Gianluca Vialli was player manager. I'm telling you more about your own club than you know. So there you go.
Yeah, but the point is well taken from Gouldy, which is that a lot of these guys, including Marty McManus, when their careers were over in the major leagues, they were often player managers in the minors for the reason that they were over the hill by major league standards, but they could still swing it in the minor leagues. And as a result, it was really useful to be a player manager. But the thing about this set, definitely try and Google it, the 1933 DeLong set. It's one of the more unique cards in the pre-war milieu.
JC, were you a player manager when you were playing in Britain?
Yeah, I was the first ever championship for the London Mets. I managed them the first 2 years. I was a player manager, and we won championships in both of them.
There you go. It can be done.
It was super stressful. I got to tell you, it's really hard. I tried very hard to communicate with the players about what their roles were. But it's tough. It's very tough. And I'll be honest, I always batted myself lower than I probably thought I should. I remember going into the championship game in 2008 and I was exchanging cards with the other manager. He's like, oh great. Josh is batting sixth. This is an absurd team because, I was a reasonably good player at that point relative to the level.
And you just did that because to keep everybody happy.
Yeah. I looked at where could I be the lowest and it would still be effective and realistic. I would always sort of lower myself rather than higher so that other players felt good about where they were in the lineup.
I mean, I admire you for that, buddy. I admire you for that. Where it becomes more complicated is when you head coach to your son's team. I did 13 years at the legendary Corsham Cobras, as you boys know, and my son never won Coach's Player of the Year, and yet he was one of my elite players. And that was because I always felt that I had to give it to somebody else. And he's never forgiven me.
Oh, I was player manager.
For what?
Solo synchronized swimming.
Were you?
Boom, boom, boom. That's our cue to move on.
Okay.
That's my set. Good night, everybody.
Great stuff. Really enjoyed that. One last question. This is the question that everybody would ask if this was, one of those auction shows. JC, if you were to sell that card of Marty McManus, what would it be worth?
Yeah, so I bought it for, I think, $95. It would probably sell today for about $150.
Okay. So a decent profit.
I'll give you 30.
If you don't do it for profit.
It's a pricey set. There are a lot of great players in it. Interesting last fact about player managers. One of the reasons Babe Ruth left the Yankees is he wanted to play that role at the end of his career, and the Yankees would not give it to him. So that's why he cut ties with the Yankees at the end of his
career. There you go.
Interesting. Right, well, that's it, guys. That's all we've got time for episode 2 of season 7. Can you believe we've been doing this for 7 years?
No.
It's almost as depressing as knowing that we have not done Channel 5 Baseball for 18 years. We did it for 12. It's now 18 seasons that we've been off air, guys. Yeah. If you thought we were irrelevant in 2008, imagine how irrelevant we are now.
I didn't know we were ever relevant.
Exactly. Oh, I think we had a bit of relevance. We had a bit. We certainly ruined a few educations.
It would have been funny if we had have done the show during the era of social media. Like, we got it really easy, guys, right? Like, we never had the trolls on X or the trolls on Facebook, like making a name for themselves by taking a stand. We just had people who wanted to send emails in the middle of the night. We were so lucky for the timing.
We even had a fax number, you know, fax in the show. That's how old we are.
JC, I do have to take an issue with that comment because I know for a fact that our dear friend Eric, the producer on this program, used to hide the really nasty emails calling me names. And there were a fair few. There were very few calling you names, but there was a fair few calling me names. And he was such a sweet man because he knew I was pathetically weak that if I read one where I'm called a name, I'd get upset. That'd be it. I'd walk off in a huff. So he used to hide them from me.
But here's the thing about social media, Gouldie. Take that number, whatever it was that Eric, and it was probably larger than it should have been. It
took up a lot of computer space.
And then times it exponentially.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be able to hide from it. So let's consider ourselves lucky that our minor celebrity was in an era where people were more gentle.
Analog. Bring back analog.
Right, guys. Obviously, guys, we'd love it if you could help us out with spreading the word. And obviously with the Johnny and Josh Show on Twitter. I believe, is this going to be on Facebook, Eric?
Sure.
Yeah. I'm asking you because you're the one that does all the work.
He's just calculating how long it's going to take to cut with all the errors we've made.
I know.
Facebook, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. No TikTok, no Blue Sky yet. No OnlyFans. But follow us wherever we are.
I think that's OnlyFans, Eric. Yeah, you have great feet.
Well, no, I'm not thinking about feet. Why don't we get a Johnny, Josh, Eric fans only? What do they call it? OnlyFans?
OnlyFans. Do you know what OnlyFans is, Goldie?
Yeah, I vaguely do. And we could show off our baseball shirts with no T-shirt on underneath.
Okay, there's a thought. Or, you know, what we should be doing, actually, Johnny, is we should be in a episode on Gogglebox, you and me. And so we can watch. I want to watch you watching Spinal Tap. Moving on.
It's been a pleasure, as always. Just before we go, can you just confirm the Atlanta Braves are the greatest team in Major League Baseball in 2026?
Oh, look, we're a technical glitch. Can't hear you, Johnny. Moving on.
Too early.
Guys, love you loads. From us all, thank you for listening. We will be back, I promise, eventually. Can't guarantee when, but make sure you stick with us. If baseball is your game, this is the only place to be. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourselves. Up the Braves!
Yeah.